Hello, welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. This is a show about magic, specifically the magic practiced in North America. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane, and we'll be acting as a docent on this blog and podcast. We are practicing witches who have worked with several New World systems, and if you like magic, particularly American folk magic, then this is the show for you. So, what is this podcast about? Well, the idea for this project came about when we noticed that there were a lot of podcasts for pagans and witches focused on ritual politics and social interaction, but not a lot on just straightforward lore, history, and practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of my favorite podcasts, which did address these issues, they've gone away. Programs like The Crooked Path and The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour have either gone into hibernation or tend to post very infrequently. And as my mama always told me, if you don't see what you're looking for on the shelf, go home and make it yourself.
So the project is hopefully going to help all of those magical practitioners out there who identify with their New World roots and make sense of magic as it happens on the American landscape. This is a journey, so we may take some occasional detours, but we'll try to keep it interesting and generally maintain some kind of forward momentum. So you may be wondering whether or not you already practice New World witchery. You may be wondering if it's even something you want to know more about. And you may be wondering just what the heck we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All fair questions, but let's tackle the last question first. What is American traditional witchcraft?
American traditional witchcraft, or New World witchery, is a set of practices based on time-tested and historically grounded magical systems found in North America. It's important to say here, a set of practices. As I define it, and I think as you define it as well,
mm-hmm.
New World witchery is not necessarily a religious practice, although it does presuppose at least some sort of spiritual dimension to the world in general. And it often does call upon common figures found in other religions. I don't know if that's something you would agree with or not, but...
Definitely. I mean, I have heard of a few atheists who practice
mm-hmm.
witchcraft, but... for me, that's rare,
you know,
few and far between. So, yeah, but I wouldn't necessarily say.
Yeah, it's almost a, the atheists that I've known who've practiced witchcraft do it more as a psychological exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And this American traditional witchcraft, funny thing about America is it's a pretty religious place. I don't know if you've noticed that. So yeah, there is some sort of spiritual dimension to it. It's just not a specific spiritual dimension.
Right.
So there's a loose assembly of folk magics that make up New World witchery, and they're all more about what a person does than what he or she believes. A big part of why we need to make this distinction has to do with the historical record. There are lots of examples regarding the kind of spiritual or magical workings people do, but not so many talking about what they believe when it comes to witchcraft and magic. Since the show will be using a great deal of academic sourcing for the material, it necessarily will focus more on the practice than the philosophy. So now we'd like to tell you a little bit about ourselves, get into a little bit of our personal history with witchcraft.
So on that note, how did you get into witchcraft in general, and how did it sort of segue into New World witchcraft?
Okay. Well, I started off really when I was just a little boy. A little kid, I always had a fascination with magic, loved magic so much.
You mean like card trick magic, or do you mean...
Ah, well, there's the rub. I did like the card trick magic, but only because that's the only thing that was accessible to me. Seeing movies like Willow
mm-hmm.
and Labyrinth and things like that made me have this deep appreciation for this other kind of magic that I just couldn't find anything on.
Right.
So I defaulted to the card tricks and whatnot. And that was fine for a little while. When I was about 11 years old, I went to this bookstore with my mom. And my mom was a devout Catholic, very much practicing, went every week and all days of obligation, that kind of stuff. And there was this book at this bookstore that... was called The Encyclopedia of White Magic, I believe, by Patty Slade. And as soon as I opened it, I thought, oh, well, this is different. This is not card tricks and coin tricks, and I love this. This is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I begged my mom for it. And she was a good Catholic, but as the saying goes, Catholics are kind of the junior pagans. And so she flipped open the book, and all of the titles of the holidays that she could see were things like Candlemas and Michaelmas All Hallows Eve or All Souls Day. Very Catholic names for these holidays. So she sort of went, oh, okay, well, we'll let him have this. Uh-huh. Little did she know that if she'd read a little closer, there were things about, you know, our Horned Lord and Our Lady. You know, she wasn't looking very closely, and I'm thankful for that. So that book really opened me up to all this. And I was the kind of kid who really loved magic so much, I would go and stand on the little dirt hill in our neighborhood and summon the winds and call to the winds with my big stick in my hand and be a wizard. Not a popular child. So I was really fascinated by that kind of magic. And this sort of started me on the path of magic as a religious practice, as well as getting me interested in folk magic, because there was a lot of folk magic in that from the British Isles. And then in middle and high school, I also kept looking for other examples of folk magic. I remember checking out any book in the library that had to do with folk magic, not necessarily Wicca, because there was nothing in our library about Wicca, but things like, I remember there was this book that had a bunch of little like folk sayings and charms, like see a pin and pick it up and all the day you have good luck, see a pin and let it lay, bad luck follows you all day, which Lane was telling me earlier, she's heard that in another form.
Yeah, as Penny. See a penny, pick it up. All day long, you'll have good luck.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably more common here.
Yeah.
To hear it as Penny. But that was how I read it. And there was this series of books on all the old Universal movie monsters like Dracula and Frankenstein and the Wolfman. And the Wolfman book, of course, it talked about the movie, but it also had tangential stuff about the lore. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I remember very distinctly was this black and white photograph of a guy standing next to a bonfire on the beach, and he was naked except he had this wolf skin wrapped around his loins, and it gave you the spell for becoming a werewolf. And I thought, oh, that's awesome. Where do I buy a wolf skin? Never got a wolf skin. We're all thankful for that. I think we can all agree Taylor Lautner makes a better werewolf than I ever will. Anyway. So got into all this kind of magic. Junior year, I had to write a term paper, and I was sort of nudged into doing a term paper on Druidry by a friend. And so I wrote this term paper on Druidry. I was really interested in it. I got really into the discussion of it. And, it was kind of unearthing stuff about, like, oh, they weren't just a bunch of crazy heathens that were all, you know, out to destroy mankind through human sacrifice. It wasn't that at all. Instead, I wrote this really sympathetic term paper towards druids and talked a little bit about the new druid movements and things like that, and turned in my rough draft and was promptly told by the teacher, no, I don't think you can write on this topic anymore.
Mm-hmm. Which, funnily enough, I have done pretty much the same paper my senior year for mm-hmm. my end of year research paper, and again, I did actually get to finish mine, but my teacher did. I got an A, but she did not like the conclusion that I came to.
Mm.
So, anyhow.
Yeah, mine was nipped in the bud, and as sort of a private revenge strategy, I wrote a term paper on chaos theory, which, looking back, was just horribly pretentious and stupid. Probably made no sense at all, but made me feel really vindicated. Like, well, fine, if I can't write about ruins, I'll write about chaos theory. Take that. So it all worked out in the end. It kind of deepened my understanding of that as a religious practice, mm-hmm. kind of got me interested in thinking, maybe there's something here. The next year, I decided, okay, I'm actually going to try one of these religious-style magical rituals, and I did. And it was like, well, hello, this is exactly what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. It clicked.
It did. It exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you have to understand that, I'm in the Bible Belt, and I was growing up in the rural part of the Bible Belt, and I was trying to be very Christian at the time. I read through the Bible twice, and then the third time just reading all the parables and just trying to get some messages out of it, meditating on the passages I read. And I would go and, sit, and while I was meditating, I'd say, okay, God and Jesus, I'm here. Give me something to work with, just tell me, you know, what you meant by this passage tonight. Tell me what I can learn from this. And sometimes, you know, I'd kind of feel like, okay, I feel like I learned this, but it was more of a, you know, psychological thing, nothing really clear. As soon as I did this ritual, which I believe was a Mabon ritual at the time, it was a harvest ritual of some kind, because I remember corn shucks involved. And as soon as I did that night, I went and said, okay, I'm here. Whoever's out there, let me know what's going on. Instantly got this perfect image of this god and goddess who absolutely have stuck with me in some form or fashion since then. Not necessarily like I worship them exclusively or anything like that, but these two were formidable, and they spoke to me, very clearly said, you know, it wasn't quite a welcome home, but it was, you know, we're glad you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Very much, you know, thank you for finding us.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. And through that process, sort of discovered Wicca, began practicing. And this is coming from a place of I only really had access to books. And the internet was just getting cranking at the time. So got a couple of text-based websites. Woohoo. Those
right.
were fun. Like, oh, you know, when the pictures came out, it was like, what? The internet has pictures now? No one can live at this speed. So, yeah, I was reading books like Scott Cunningham, Silver Wave, Ravenwolf, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of people out there who are haters on those particular authors.
Which is a little understandable, but at the same time, some of the vitriol
mm-hmm.
is not, in my opinion.
Yes, absolutely. It's we understand there's, you know, this sort of new agey side of that and fluffy side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But as a starting place, you could do a lot worse.
Exactly.
And Scott Cunningham, there's definitely some good folk magic in him. So Ravenwolf gives you some solid structures to work with.
Right.
There's, you know, I'm not saying that I think everybody should go and start there or should do what they do, but it's a good place to start for a lot of people.
It's where we both started and,
yeah.
you know, I feel pretty comfortable with where I am today. So
yeah, exactly. It got me here. I'm thankful for that.
Right.
So then I practiced that for like 6 or 7 years, I think, as more or less a self-taught, self-dedicated Wiccan,
mm-hmm.
Working from those systems, before I finally started going, okay, well, this has been interesting, but it's not working exactly like I want it to. It's turning into more of, it was turning into more of a junior Catholicism on my part than any kind of witchcraft, which is what I was so fascinated with. So I went and went looking and found some traditional, more traditional witchcraft type information.
Sorry if I could stop you. So you were saying that it was getting too ceremonial for you?
Not even ceremonial. It was getting too religious for me.
Oh.
Where it was nothing but worship,
mm-hmm.
and instead magic of, kind of disappeared.
Instead of practical,
yes.
hands-on type of stuff?
Yes. You okay. know, there might have been a few little crafty bits that I could do, but they weren't... really all about, they weren't about the magic that was so appealing to me. They weren't really about anything that tied into my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the magic rituals that I would be doing at the time were rituals to heal the earth, which, while a very noble and good thing to do, doesn't really apply to my day-to-day behavior other than, you know, I'm a very environmental person, but...
Right. I mean, because you were basically a teenager, like early 20s, right?
Yes, exactly.
So,
and so at that point, you know, what do you want? You want sex, money, and fame. So, like, that was not at all what I was getting out of this. And not to say that I should have been, but it made me go, okay, I need to look somewhere else for a little bit more information,
mm-hmm.
more stuff to work with. And through that process, I wound up getting in touch with a British traditional Wicca group. And they were Gardnerian. I do want to clarify that I have studied both British traditional witchcraft and British traditional Wicca. They're different.
Mm-hmm.
Studied with Wicca first, at our court for about a year. And I had to leave them because I should go ahead and say up front, I'm married to a wonderful, wonderful Christian lady who is just... She's fantastic and very, very supportive and very,
Christian
very tolerant.
Lady makes her sound like she's 80.
I know. Like, it sounds like she has tea and, you know, but it's not quite, not that. But
no, she's great. I love his wife.
Yeah. She's fantastic. And we have a beautiful baby boy now. And so, this kind of got off track there.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
My fault.
No, it's okay. So yeah, married to this wonderful Christian woman who would not have been terribly comfortable with the ritual nudity side of Gardnerian Wicca.
Understandably so.
And there are some Alexandrian traditions that practice clothes, but they can't tell you they practice clothes until you're initiated, at which point it's just, it was too complicated for me to be able to navigate without fear of doing damage to my marriage in some way. So I said, thank you very much. I still have a pretty good relationship with most of the people I worked with in that group. And I learned a lot. I learned, hey, there's something entirely else that I've totally been missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went into more British traditional witchcraft, the work of Robert Cochrane. I found all of his letters, started reading The White Goddess by Robert Graves and The Golden Vow by James Frazer, and sort of understanding, oh, there's this whole other dimension to witchcraft. It's got this other earthier, darker side.
Right.
Which...
You get your hands dirty.
Yeah. And I liked that. I liked, I get some dirt under my nails about this. And from there, I started, like, exploring a little bit more of my own history. And saying, you know, okay, British traditional witchcraft, that's fantastic. Sadly, I'm not British. I don't have a whole lot of British heritage. I have some Irish heritage, so I started kind of looking at that. Didn't really hit me because it still felt too distant, too removed. So then I started thinking, well, okay, what about this side of the pond? What do I have here? And first and foremost, I realized I'm a Southerner. I'm really proud to be a Southerner.
We both are. And that may... We very much want to clarify that does not mean...
Yay, slavery! No, that's not where we're going with that. And I know that's what people think. We're terribly... We're just as sorry that that happened and sad. And, you know, it's a horrible part of our history, but... Everybody's history has some dark points.
Right. We're just saying we really enjoy the cultural and the magical aspects of being from the South and the, you know, the Appalachian area. Mm-hmm. And even if you want to get, you know, pretty deep South, like Louisiana with voodoo and the hoodoo that comes out of there.
So. Absolutely. And so that's where, you know, I started realizing there's all these magical practices in the South. You've got the New Orleans style voodoo. You've got hoodoo. You've got Appalachian granny magic. You've got a little bit of the Pennsylvania Dutch powwow that made it below the Mason-Dixon line. Just, and, you know, low country, Carolina magic and stuff like that. All this stuff, I'm sitting there going, oh, I'm Southern. I can do all of this. And I realized, wait, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to do stuff that connects me to America because I am an American. Mm-hmm. Stuff that connects to my homeland and my home soil. And through that, I'm also exploring other parts of America, in this traditional witchcraft form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learning about things like curanderismo from Mexico and the southwestern states, the fairy tradition of Victor Anderson from the Pacific Northwest, things like that. And so that's kind of how I've gotten here. I realized I really love all of this American witchcraft, which is all about doing stuff and being very practical. And, you know, and you can layer on some religious symbolism if you want to, but it's a personal thing. It's not...
Right.
Yeah. It's not like you have to worship this god and this goddess, or you have to even worship a god and a goddess.
Exactly.
There are several witches, and this will probably get some nice irate emails. There are several what I would call American traditional witches who very much worship and worship only God and Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That's their pantheon, is God and Jesus.
Well, you, I mean, growing up in the buckle of the Bible Belt, you're going to get that. You know, it's because it's so ingrained in you from, you know, a child that this is how we're here and this is who you're supposed to worship. And then, you know, even if you find out later about witchcraft and, you know, and obviously not everybody because we were both raised Christian and then obviously we're here now. But but some people still identify with Jesus and, you know, what I would call, you know, the Christian God as their personal deities, I suppose, is a good way to put that.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, that's exactly what it is, you know, that's the personal pantheon that you select. And that's why American traditional witchcraft is kind of unique, is that you can have a personal pantheon.
Right.
And...
Another thing I really enjoy about it.
and you know, there, you definitely work with some spirits and some things like that, but you don't have to view the spirits you're working with as gods necessarily. They can be land spirits or nature spirits. You have some more open viewpoints in working with them. And in that way, you can also be more practical in helping other people with witchcraft because, you know, you may be working with a Christian person who needs your magic, your magical advice and help. And, you know, because their personal pantheon is what they're going to be working with, you can tell them, do this, this, and this thing, plug in these names, your God and Jesus, and you're fine. You're good to go. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Now, Lane came to this, let's see, you came to it kind of the same way I did, from my understanding.
Basically, except I wasn't fully alone. I had a group of three or four friends who, you know, we sort of all discovered it together in high school, and we sort of explored it together. And, you know, we were very new, and we did have a few rituals, and we had, you know, it was very fulfilling at the time, and, you know, we just had, it was really nice, and we were very close. But then, you know, we graduated and moved to various parts of the country, and some of us are still really close, you know, they're my core group of friends, mm-hmm. but, you know, we're on very different paths magically now, which is fine, you know.
And now, when you started off, were you wandering the halls in all black and basically?
It was the craft every day, basically.
Okay, good. That's what
soundtrack and everything. Fantastic. No, I'm kidding. No, not at all. I mean, people sort of started to figure it out. I don't think we were as cautious about it as we should have been, mm-hmm. but and we did get a lot of slack from some people, but for the most part, it wasn't, you know, traumatizing. There were a few days that I recall.
People were chanting witch, you're a
no,
throwing stones.
Luckily, it never got that bad. But I mean, there were a few people who said a few things, like, you know, it. I really hate the word witch rhymes with bitch. Can I just say that?
I think we've got an explicit label in the podcast. We're okay.
But so anyway. A lot of people in Wicca sort of talk about, or at least I've experienced people talking about hot and cold spells, mm-hmm. and I don't mean spells as in magical right. spells. I just, you know, you go through a sort of, I really want to practice every single day, and, you know, I want to, and you think about it a lot, and it's, you know, it's very much part of your consciousness, and then sometimes you just sort of, you know, kind of shy away from it for a little mm-hmm. while. And I wonder why that is. Maybe we can talk about that at some point.
Yeah, that'll be a good discussion topic, I think.
But, and, you know, if you have any opinions about it, please, you know, shoot us an email. Mm-hmm. But, so I went through that for, I would say, a couple years. You know, I mm-hmm. didn't really practice. I didn't cast at all. I did just kind of, you know, sort of say, hey to the moon every now and then. Mm-hmm. You know, I would acknowledge that it was a solstice and, you know, maybe pray a little bit, but it wasn't a full-on like, ritual, you know.
Hey, goddess, what's up? Oh, you are. Woo.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't a huge part of my life for a little while. I guess because college kicked my butt. But mm-hmm. But then one day I had graduated and just got married, and I got an email from an old friend from high school who I'd done various plays with. And he said, hey, do you want to stage manage for my new play that I'm doing? I said, sure. And then Corey was the actor mm-hmm. for one of them, and that is how we met.
Yep.
And
now we didn't realize immediately.
No, not at all.
That we had this connection.
No. I mean, I thought you were funny. You were, you know, mm-hmm. a nice guy, but we weren't close or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then randomly you said something. I don't even remember what started it or what we were joking about, but you said something about dancing naked under the full moon. And from anyone else, it wouldn't have been an intriguing comment, but it did mm-hmm. sort of, like, it set off a flag or, you know, a bell in my head. Mm-hmm. So I looked at you and I said, no, if there's anything wrong with that. And you said, no, of course not. And mm-hmm. once again, it set off the bell in my head. And I was like, okay, there's something to that. I need to address that later. So we got through most of the play.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was, like, the last week.
Basically. I think it was the last night, actually.
Was it?
No, it wasn't. We did a few more shows. But anyway, yeah, it was basically, like, you know, a few performances before the end, mm-hmm. where we and our spouses, we all decided to go out to dinner. It was opening night. I remember that now.
Oh, it was. Yes, that's right.
So we got to dinner, and once again, randomly, don't remember how, we get on the subject of religion, and I say, oh, well, you know, what do you subscribe to? And, you know, Corey says, well, I'm pagan. And I say, oh, so am I. And we high five. And that was sort of the beginning of a big magical journey for me, I would say.
And then from there, well, we started what was that? We did our first ritual together. Mm-hmm. We decided, you know, it'd be fun to practice. Yeah, at Midsummer, mm-hmm. I think, was the first thing.
And that was, it was, I don't know, sometimes daytime rituals aren't as effective for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the,
We're witchy, we like to be out at night.
I guess so. But, it was a good ritual. It just mm-hmm. wasn't as effective as it could have been, I think, mm-hmm. maybe. But, then we did our...
Halloween, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for Halloween or Samhain, whatever you want to call it. And that was intense.
Yeah.
It was a really, really good, powerful ritual that we felt great about after we were just like...
We're like, hello, that worked wonderfully.
Yeah, and you know, we've done some crossroads mm-hmm. work that we've gone out to the crossroads and, you know, we started out sort of, I would call it eclectic witchcraft. It wasn't mm-hmm. any sort of tradition. And then we started to get into British traditional witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And we did that for a few months, maybe a little longer. Yeah,
just a couple of practical sessions, basically.
Right. And that was fulfilling. You mm-hmm. know, I liked that. And but then Corey started with...
Hoodoo class.
Yeah, a hoodoo class. Mm-hmm. And it started telling me more and more about this. It was really fascinating, and I hate to say this, but my only exposure to hoodoo before that was The Skeleton Key, that movie with Kate Hudson.
Which, to be fair, actually has quite a bit of good hoodoo in it.
Yeah, I mean, I actually really enjoyed that movie. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, it's fun. It's totally fun.
Yeah, it's a good movie. But, so that had been my only exposure to it, and then he starts telling me, well, you know, this, using the basis of the movie, when they spread brick dust, you know, this is what brick dust is used for. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, he was telling me more and more about it, it was making more and more sense. So we finally started to do some hoodoo together. Mm-hmm. And we did, I applied for a job and did a hoodoo ritual to help me, mm-hmm. you know, sort of seal the deal on that. There were a few others.
Yeah, we did... We did, and we need to...
Oh, yeah, we should talk about this.
Yes, we did a hex on somebody, a hoodoo-style hexing, or crossing.
Yeah, and she deserved it.
Yes, she totally deserved it. clearly, if we did it, she deserved it. No, but we need to be very frank on that. We are not the kind of folks who are going to shy away from that side of magic. Mm-hmm. It's there, it's important that people understand that it's not necessarily bad. Sometimes justice needs to be served, and sometimes that's the only way to get it. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, Lane had been dealing with this woman who was in a position where she could do some real harm, not only to her employees but to some children. And so we decided, okay, we've gone through some proper authorities, proper channels, mm-hmm. and nothing's been done. We're going to try this hex out.
Right, and just you know to. Just sticking with the ritual itself, you know, it was an interesting ritual.
Yeah, it was cathartic, if nothing else.
Exactly. You know, if nothing else, it made you feel better.
Yeah.
And you know, we've done a few other things since then, and, you know, we've sort of, like you said, fell off the wagon a little bit mm-hmm. when it comes to practicing together, and for me, practicing at all, it's sort of like I'm going through a little bit of a cold spell again, but then Corey brought up this podcast, and it was mm-hmm. like, ooh, yay, you know, something to...
Yeah, spark the interest again.
Exactly, yeah, so...
And I've been studying with another group lately
right.
As well. The one that was doing the hoodoo group, they've also got some other component branches that I work with.
And, you know, the whole baby thing.
And the baby. The baby doesn't interfere with your life at all. So.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of
how... That's a little bit about us.
Yeah, that's how we kind of came to it. Now, as far as this podcast goes, we are going to be focusing a lot on historical precedent, documented practices. We're also going to be interested in inherited practices... whether from personal family traditions or spirit-conferred traditions, you know, intuition and guidance and mm-hmm. things like that.
An interesting topic, I think, would talk, especially since you just had a baby, mm-hmm. is to, you know, talk about how you plan to pass on.
Right, especially because I'm married to a Christian and,
right.
and I'm not necessarily going to indoctrinate my child with a pagan theology or worldview. Probably will subtly get in there, but definitely I want him to be able to understand magic.
Right.
And also, with family traditions, I do want to clarify, I'm not talking about the people who say, my grandmother initiated me into the line of witchcraft, which we've practiced since the 1600s, and it's an unbroken lineage, and then you go to their mother, and their mother's like, no, we went to First Presbyterian Church. You know, That's not what I'm talking about. Those people generally, I think, are full of crap. Family traditions are things like your grandmother says, oh, you spit three times and it gets rid of the evil eye. They're little practices that people do have in their families that that have made it through
time. It's almost like old wives' tales instead of like any sort of practice. It's just
exactly
like sayings or...
Exactly. It's little things that kind of add up to a bigger...
Right. Even superstitions that a lot of people hold, like, you know, don't open an umbrella in the house. Like, my mom was always big about that. And
yes.
It's interesting because I don't follow that at all. Like, it's not a superstition with me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is with her. And
right.
It's something you grow up thinking about. Or, you know, breaking a mirror, 7 years bad luck. That
yes.
type of stuff.
And all that stuff sort of ties in together to this. And we'll get into all that folk magic aspect of
yeah.
this eventually. I should go ahead and clarify. While we'll probably talk a little bit about British traditional witchcraft, New World witchery is not really related to that. It's got some tangential connections, but it's not a distinct heir to that. It's something new. It's got roots in older traditions, but it's an evolving path.
Mm-hmm.
It's tied to ancestral practice and the land on which it's practiced and history. It's not what I call a tumbleweed path, though. It doesn't drift from tradition to tradition. Whenever winds change, it's got its roots,
mm-hmm.
But those roots are not necessarily connected to the craft of the British Isles, except in some really sort of disparate ways. But we'll get into that later.
Yes.
Most of all, this is doing magic. We're going to be talking a lot about what we do, what we practice, how we do it, our results, things like that. We want people to be willing to roll up their sleeves, light a candle, try things out, and above all, don't conjure anything up you can't put back down. That's fair warning on that. But this is probably a good point to tell you a little bit about what we expect this podcast and blog to be like format-wise. We'll be hopefully a semi-monthly podcast with about 2 episodes per month. One will be dedicated to lore, history, practice, things like that. The second one will be an interview with someone who's either a scholar or practitioner of New World witchery. We'll be trying to keep these shows around 30 to 45 minutes. This one will probably be a little longer than that. Some may be longer, some may be shorter. We'll be recommending things like books, products, ingredients, activities to help you open your own road up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this show is going to be, I think, very educational for both of us. It's going to be exploring some things that we're only now discovering ourselves, but it's also going to be, it may be very 101 for some folks. But please stick with us because we think that in the end you'll actually find out more about things than just a 101. If there's something that sounds very newbie to you, it's probably because it's new to us, but I can almost guarantee you we'll get into something that you don't know about at some point. And
right.
if we don't, then you can feel smarter than us and that makes you a happy person. do you want to give them our contact details, Lane?
Sure. Okay. Let's see. The blog will be updated more frequently than the podcast, hopefully at least once or twice per week. We'll be posting show notes, short essays, links, and various odds and ends that we think might be worth a look. So please feel free to send us an email, and if there's something you'd like us to post about or do a show about. Our email is compassandkey, all one word, at gmail.com. Again, that's compassandkey at gmail. The blog site, in case you found this podcast in some other way, is newworldwitchery.wordpress.com. We'll mention these contacts again at the end of the show, too, so don't worry about that. And after the break, we'll get started with some basic questions about New World witchery. Don't go away.
Irish drinking songs, Scottish bagpipes, totally trad jigs and reels, Celtic rock. If it's independent Celtic music, you can find it on Mark Gunn's Irish and Celtic Music Podcast at CelticMusicPodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Brooke, and I'm the iPod Witch. Pull up a chair, have something to drink, and join me for my podcast, The iPod Witch. You'll find me at iPodWitch.blogspot.com. Blessed be.
Welcome back. So, what systems make up New World witchery? Well, the risk in saying American traditional witchcraft or New World witchery is blank is that inevitably I will leave something out. Or try to include something that later proves to be only tangentially related. The same risk comes when I try to create a short list of component practices of New World witchery. Certain magical systems may not seem to me or to us to be New World because they are essentially carryovers from another continent. Others might seem so closely related, again, to me or to us or to one or both of us, that we include one and not the other. A good example of this for me would be Obeya and Palo, which are similar enough to my uneducated brain that I would confuse them very easily. Mm-hmm. So the trick to narrowing it down is, for me, education. As we learn more, the lists are going to expand and contract a little bit. But for now, here's kind of our short list of what we're discussing.
So, as for which magical systems we currently think of as New World witchery, the following is fairly straightforward. Hoodoo or root work.
Mm-hmm.
Powwow, which is Pennsylvania Dutch magic.
Mm-hmm.
Which, didn't you say was also called power doctoring?
It can be power doctoring. I think I never know if it's pronounced Browcury or Browcherie, but there's that. It's okay. Also connected.
Mm-hmm. New Orleans style voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Appalachian granny magic.
Mm-hmm.
Ozark mountain magic. Brujeria or curanderismo?
Very good, yes. Excellent.
I took Spanish, I should be able to pronounce that. Victor Anderson's fairy tradition or vigia, and New England witchery,
mm-hmm.
which is different from, British traditional
yes.
witchcraft.
Yes, it's more closely related to that than it is to a lot of other things. But
I sort of think of them as the same thing, which I shouldn't, but in my head associates it with it because New England, and uh-huh. I hear England, and anyway.
Yeah, it's basically colonial magic.
Right. So, again, this is just a current inventory, and it may change a good deal over time. Hopefully, if you're enjoying this journey with us, you can help shape this list, too. So.
Now, we've made the decision to leave off more or less the magical traditions of South America and the West Indies for the moment. This is not intended as a snub towards those traditions. In fact, it's quite the opposite. I can't speak for Lane, but I myself am incredibly ignorant when it comes to religions like Candomblé, Palo, Haitian voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to misrepresent them here. And there are scholars who have done so much better work on this than we have. So please seek out those texts and those podcasts, if they exist, on those specific areas. They'll give you a lot more information than we ever could.
So we also want to talk about Native American magic. Is Native American or, First Nations magic an earlier form of New World witchery? So, in general, while First Nations magical practices are somewhat included in New World witchery because of their historic influence on other magical systems, we don't consider them in and of themselves New World witchery.
Mm-hmm.
Most of NWW.
Yes.
New World witchery practices are based on traditions and systems which emerged in North and South America after contact with Europe, Africa, and other foreign or colonial powers. First Nations groups have their own cosmology, their medicine and magic systems, and traditions which were here before, quote-unquote, witchcraft was found on these continents.
Mm-hmm.
While some sorcery may have been found in First Nation tribes, the idea that it was in any way an organized system or that the commonly accepted archetypes associated with a witch or even a wizard is dubious at best. So, at least in our findings.
Yes, that's as far as we're concerned. Yes, there's going to be some influence from Native American magic, but it's not in and of itself what we're studying here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, we also want to talk about, I guess, our
credentials?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are the Grand High Poobahs of New World Retreat. No, that's a complete load. Why are we the ones discussing this,
right.
I guess, is what we're saying.
Yeah, so while we may occasionally speak with what seems to be an authoritative voice on New World witchery, please understand that we're always, always, always trying to learn and understand more about it. Our opinions are our own, and we're not the final word on any of the systems discussed here. The work we provide through the blog and the podcast will be as heavily sourced as possible, and when we veer into less than academic territory, we'll do our best to indicate that.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, because you're very academic and I'm more...
More intuitive.
Yeah.
More of a free spirit nature child. Oh, let me really quickly interject. I know a lot of people kind of see that and say, oh, that's, so that they're just trying to play, big witch on campus. And that's not us. We've got day jobs. We're normal folks. You wouldn't know us to see us.
No.
I mean, it's just, it's so we're not trying to approach this and become like the grand high masters of New World witchery. We're here to learn.
Right. So, we'll do our best to, try to improve both the quality of the information and the breadth of our understanding that you find here. So if we seem to be sort of mishmashing things a bit, bear with us. Witchcraft sort of tends to mishmash into everything anyway.
It's a bit of a mishmashy topic.
It's a fun word.
Mishmash.
So anyway, we welcome well-reasoned and intelligent criticism, so feel free to jump in with that if you like. But please also be able to cite sources for your own critiques. Also, please practice diplomacy. We
love getting feedback. Yeah. We even love being corrected on something when we're wrong. We don't love flame wars. Those just get old.
Yeah, they'll just be deleted.
they'll disappear.
So, we're sure we're going to make some mistakes, and please let us know if you catch it. So the same goes for a blog. If you post a comment, keep it to the point, but, don't be a jerk, pretty much.
Yeah, just don't be a jerk. That's all we're asking. If you want to say, I'm sorry, you're completely wrong, and I need to say that you're talking out of your rear end, fine. Point us in the right direction. We're happy to do that. Mm-hmm. But please don't, come on there and say, you're stupid and look funny, because we know that already.
So, okay, anyway, that's done.
Yes. Now, as far as what we know about these systems, let me say here and now, we practice what we preach. And we're not going to discuss these systems of magic unless we've gotten dirt under our nails working with them in some way. At least one of us.
Yeah.
The exception to that rule is that there are several magical systems which are initiatory in lineage and initiatory as far as teaching goes. So my information on those systems is always going to be based on reading or discussion with an inside participant. Whenever we have a guest, we're not going to ask them questions that will compromise their initiatory oaths or oaths of secrecy. That's just not our bag. We will ask them questions about their areas of expertise in the hopes that their insider status will illuminate us as much as possible on their magical tradition. But again, we're not going to ask that they violate their oaths or initiations. Hopefully that's going to foster sort of a trusting atmosphere, let people interact in a really natural way. And occasionally we'll, have people that'll say, I can't answer that. And that's okay. We're fine with that. Uh-huh. We'll just try to fill in the gaps as best we can. And some things will still have gaps. That's just life. And let me finally say, though, unequivocally, we are not the grand high poobahs of anything. Our dogs and cats seem to think they're the grand high poobahs of our lives, and we won't disabuse them of that notion, but that's the only poobah in our lives. There's no poobah-ishness, no poobahism on our end. We're not going to poobah anything.
Oh, Lord.
And lady. Just kidding. Stick around. We're going to have a little witchy history after the break.
Hi, I'm J.O. Scully, host of Witchery of One, a podcast that focuses on the experiences, practices, and opinions of one witch, me. Shows for download can be found on my blog page, which is witcheryofone.libsyn.com, or do a search on iTunes. All blessings be.
All right, welcome back. Now it's time for a little witchy history. Now, the idea that witchcraft has been present in some form or another throughout the post-1492 Americas is central to New World witchery. In reality, though, it's very hard to prove this, because historical sources on witchcraft and magic are spotty at best and often misleading. The earliest records of witch trials in America date to around the 1620s to 1640s, which predates the Salem trials by a good 50 to 70 years. That's to be expected, as witchcraft was a hot topic at the time. There were papal bulls from the 15th and 17th century which directed the faithful, and it would seem the Protestant faithful took up the call as well, to seek out and destroy any witches in their midst. Now, I would never be one to argue that the Salem witchcraft trials were about actual witchcraft being practiced and persecuted. On the whole, it seems to have been a mix of political machinations and mass hysteria, which resulted in tragedy. Religious zealotry had a heavy hand in it, but the extent of that involvement is up for debate. And these trials are popular fodder for debate. There's a lot of theories about just who, what, and why the various trials occurred in New England. My personal favorite theory is that the bread supply was infected with the ergot fungus, which caused hallucinations and led to widespread hysteria and accusations of black magic. But I'm digressing. What is interesting about these trials is that in order to combat magic, they used magic. In one of the narratives of those trials, the process of making a witch cake is recorded, and I quote, "A few days before this solemn day of prayer, Mr. Paris's Indian man and woman made a cake of rye meal with the children's water, which is their urine, and baked it with the ashes and gave it to the dog. This was done as a means to discover witchcraft, soon after which those ill-afflicted or afflicted persons named several that they said they saw. The Indian man and woman referenced there were the infamous and often mythologized Tituba and her husband John Indian. The cake theoretically would have caused the original witch in the community to have great pain when the dog ate it, thereby revealing the party responsible. This incident was later denounced, but it's important to note that already two things were happening here. One, magic was being used to combat magic. In other words, the old world tradition of using cunning folk to combat evil sorcery was alive and well in the new world. And two, the community was turning to outsiders like Tituba for their magical expertise, a practice which would bear much magical fruit in the coming centuries. Elsewhere in the New World, witchcraft was also being sought out under less Protestant guises. In the Quarai Pueblo near Mexico City, two men were accused of quote-unquote talismanic magic around 1670, and were prosecuted by no less a force than the Spanish Inquisition. One of the men escaped but was later killed by Apaches as he fled to Mexico. The talismanic magic has been practiced for centuries in various places, but it seems that in this particular instance, the church did not turn a blind eye to it, as it generally did. Whether that's because of the New World context, or if there was something particularly unnerving about the talismans or the men using them, is hard to say. In the beginning of the 18th century, a new wave of immigrants arrived in North America, mostly Scotch, Irish, and German in origin. Many of these people settled in what is now Pennsylvania and then moved down into the Appalachian Mountain Range. A number of these settlers had unorthodox religious convictions for their era. The Anabaptist groups, for example, that settled in Pennsylvania and West Virginia became known as the Pennsylvania Dutch, a corruption of Deutsch, which referred to the German language they spoke. Witchcraft in these areas was often discussed, but seldom persecuted with the fervor found in Massachusetts. In fact, no less a judge than William Penn himself, the founder of Pennsylvania, dismissed one charge of livestock bewitchment. As one author puts it, quote, "Penn dismissed the charge of bewitching cattle and suggested, tongue-in-cheek, that there was no law against riding a broom in Pennsylvania. He found her guilty only of having witch's reputation and ordered her to practice good behavior," unquote. Many of the practices of the Pennsylvania and Appalachian German settlers would eventually become the magical system known as powwow, or power doctoring. This set of practices, based in Judeo-Christian magic and esoteric European texts, was firmly established by the time its seminal work appeared. The Long Lost Friend, published in 1820 by John George Homan, was a collection of recipes, talismans, and charms designed to protect and heal those who used it. The practice eventually developed into what is sometimes called, I don't know if it's pronounced Braucheri or Braucheri, we'll work on figuring that out as we go along, I guess, which is a primarily healing practice based on those powwow techniques. The Scots-Irish, as they moved further into the isolated and eerily beautiful Appalachians, also began to develop their own systems of magic. These systems were based in part on the fairy doctoring of the British Isles and in part on the same charms and recipes found in powwow. This array of enchantments mingled with midwifery, Native American herb lore, and eventually faith healing to become what is known today as granny magic. Now, there's not a lot of really satisfying research on this order of magic, except for the wonderful Foxfire book series, which comes out of a school in Georgia and collects a lot of folklore of the Appalachians. And that has a great deal of this lore and magic in its pages, and I highly suggest you look into it. It's usually available through any local library. It is impossible to ignore the wretchedness of slavery when looking back on a history of American magic. The shameful indenture of African captives on American soil left those under its yoke stripped of their humanity and basic rights. It's little wonder, then, in a world where they had no control over their lives in any legal or executive way, that the imported African men and women would develop powerful magical practices to seek justice and comfort in the spirit realm. Much has been written, and much of it lately, about the magic of hoodoo, variably known as conjure or root work. I will save a detailed description of it for another time, but for now, I will say that hoodoo is an immensely powerful system of magic tied to several cultures, but rooted, so to speak, in the African-American culture of the South. It is a living tradition which has altered over time as it's encountered new herbs, roots, techniques, and supplies. Eventually, I will do a show, or perhaps even several shows, discussing this system extensively. But for now, if you'd like to look into it on your own, I'd recommend reading Mules and Men by Zora Neale Hurston, checking out the Lucky Mojo Company website, which is a font of hoodoo lore and technique, Voodoo and Hoodoo by Jim Haskins, which is much more about the latter than the former. And I would also recommend, I believe it's Blue Roots is the name of the book, which is about the Lowcountry practices of Carolina root work. Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau both wrote work that allowed Americans to spring into a new relationship with the land around them. Combining the high-minded philosophy of spiritual evolution found in Eastern religions with the idealistic Romantic movement, which had crossed over from Britain and Europe during the 19th century, transcendentalism is relevant to New World witchery not because of magical practices. Instead, these leaders, artists, and writers helped push Americans into contact with nature, and therefore the spirit of the land. Thoreau's enchanting prose about his time at Walden Pond kindled a spark of longing in many who were part of the first or second generation of Americans to move away from the agricultural countryside and into the city. In a passage from Walden, Thoreau describes the joy of collecting wood for fire in terms that are definitely spiritual and, in my opinion, at least slightly magical. Quote, "The snow had already covered the ground since the 25th of November and surrounded me suddenly with the scenery of winter. I withdrew further into my shell and endeavored to keep a bright fire, both within my house and within my breast. My employment out of doors now was to collect the dead wood in the forest, bringing it in my hands or on my shoulders, or sometimes trailing a dead pine tree under each arm to my shed. An old forest fence, which had seen its best days, was a great haul for me. I sacrificed it to Vulcan, for it was past serving the god Terminus. How much more interesting an event is that man's supper, who has just been forth in the snow to hunt, nay, you might say, steal, the fuel to cook it with. His bread and meat are sweet." This infatuation with nature as a divine force would continue in the American mind, resurging in the works of Walt Whitman, John Muir, and others. American identity at the beginning of the 20th century was divided between its industrial might concentrated in cities and its majestic natural landscape. There was a definite feeling that we, the people, were living in God's country, and that divine force was waiting to be harnessed. By the era of Reconstruction, following the Civil War, America was moving west at a tremendous pace. Now, I found very little about magical systems between the Mississippi River and the West Coast that are not variants of some kind on the previous systems mentioned. Exceptions to that rule might be the mountain magic found in the Ozarks, though it does bear a strong resemblance to both hoodoo and granny magic in many ways. And to the south, there were many magical systems bubbling up out of Mexico and Latin America. The talismanic magic mentioned earlier was an early example of what would eventually develop into the practice known as curanderismo. This blend of Catholic folk magic, talismanic charm-making, prayer, mediumship, and spiritual cleansing primarily aims to overcome the forces of evil in a person's life. Evil intentionally set in motion by a magician is known to curanderos as brujería. This simply means witchcraft, and funnily enough, there are some brujos or brujas, the masculine and feminine form of witch, who do almost the exact same thing as curanderos. Interestingly, both brujos and curanderos generally claim to be Catholic in their religious persuasion. This confusion stems from the differing understandings of the nature of magic. In brujería, spells can be used for blessing or cursing, but generally the latter is left to those pursuing justice when conventional methods have been exhausted. Curanderos would likely say that because brujería is acting against the will of God, because God is the one to administer justice in the end, it is inherently evil. Brujos and Brujas are also more likely to be holistic in their approach to magic, working with darker forces as well as lighter, which does little to endear them to the curanderos who focus primarily on god-centered healing and protection practices. There doesn't seem to be an easy reconciliation between the two, but both curanderos and brujos are sought out from Oklahoma down into Mexico and further afield as the Hispanic population expands in other areas. In the late 19th and early 20th century, the ceremonial magic which had been gaining popularity in Europe was also getting a foothold in America, largely thanks to the longtime presence of groups like the Freemasons. The growing presence of mysticism and a general interest in the occult was spurred on by Helena Blavatsky's Theosophical Society and other similar groups. Blavatsky, a Russian expatriate who had traveled the world extensively before settling in New York, was a psychic who wanted to unite the magic of the mystical with the reason of the rational, or something like that. She founded the movement that would later become spiritualism, and which would in turn shape other magical practices later on, and set up the Theosophical Society with the aim of finding a common religion of spirit in humanity. Her work was tremendously influential on the popular conception of enchantment and spiritual phenomenon that came after it, and her society boasted such magical innovators as Dion Fortune and the Rosicrucian Order. Theosophy, like Transcendentalism before it, was more a philosophical movement than any kind of practical mysticism, but it did advocate mediumship and clairvoyance as a means to communicate with the spirit world. So it kind of had a practical side. The early to mid-20th century was a busy time for the occult. Aleister Crowley and the remnants of the British Order of the Golden Dawn were all producing work which highlighted the value of magic in the modern age. In 1917, Victor Anderson was born. For those who don't know who he is, I recommend looking him up on the Lilith's Lantern site and learning more about him. That link will be posted in the show notes. Anderson, a nearly blind mystic and witch with a tremendous gift for poetry, joined up with a coven of witches practicing in Oregon in the 1930s and was initiated by them into their tradition. He, his wife Cora, who had a magical family history based largely on Ozark Mountain magic and hoodoo, and their student Gwydion Penderwen, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, it might be Gwydion Penderwen, a.k.a. Tom DeLong, formed the traditional witchcraft lineage known today as Fairy, F-E-R-I, or sometimes Fairy, F-A-E-R-I-E. Also, according to pagan scholar Chazes Clifton, 1939 saw the founding of the first recognized pagan body in the United States, the Church of Aphrodite, founded by Gleb Botkin. This group would survive until Botkin's death in the 1960s. I realize that I've said already that American traditional witchcraft is not particularly religious or particularly pagan in its form. However, the pagan mindset, I think, tends to lend itself very well to any kind of animistic or magical practice, and therefore I felt it would be a good idea to go ahead and bring this up. Whew! All of that, and we haven't even touched Wicca yet. Amazing, right? And I'm really only skimming the surface at this point. We'll be tackling each of these systems in more depth as the program goes forward. So if you've heard something that piqued your interest, stay tuned. There will be more. I should go ahead and say that when I am talking about American traditional witchcraft or New World witchery, I'm not referring to Wicca as a whole. I have nothing against Wicca, particularly the British traditional Wicca founded by Gardner and Sanders and their adherents. I also have nothing against traditional British witchcraft as practiced by Robert Cochran and his followers and other similar systems. They're all very valid and are completely 100% their own, and I would never take away from that. But this show is about American witchcraft, and as such, I will only be discussing Wicca and tradcraft as they intersect and interact with New World witchery, which they do, a lot, but we're not there yet.
So that's it for this episode. If you'd like to contact us about New World witchery or any magical subject, the address is compassandkey@gmail.com. The blog site for this show is newworldwitchery.wordpress.com. We welcome any feedback and will continually try to improve the show for you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, be well.
New World witchery is produced using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is called Homebound by the artist Jag from the album Cypress Grove Blues and can be found on magnatune.com, the PodSafe website for podcast music. Thanks for listening. See you next time.